It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everyone, welcome to another episode of The Warm Down, brought to you by the good folks at The Athletic. And entirely coincidentally, we are here with Ollie Kay from The Athletic. Are you enjoying it at the new gig?
Very much, very much. It's what have I been? They've been going 6 months in the UK. I've been there for five of those. And it's fantastic. I think all the reporters are really enjoying it. And I hope the readers are as well. But it what's enjoyable is just getting time to do the kind of things that you wouldn't normally do.
It does feel like there's a bit of a vibe of what do you feel like doing with some of the articles that I see Andy and that doing.
yeah, in the best possible way, you know, because often on a newspaper, and I've been in that situation a lot of times where you're covering club, that means you're doing press conference, and you know, preview, match report, follow up, and there's a lot more freedom in terms of there's no sort of set formula to what you do. So, I mean, Laurie Whitwell's piece from one of the matches was a thing he'd prepared in advance about the sort of making of Mason Greenwood, and then he did.
Yeah, he went and interviewed family and
coaches who'd worked with him in you know, growing up in Yorkshire and so on, and. There was another one he did on Harry Maguire where he watched it, the match with Mickey Adams, who had given Harry Maguire his debut all those years ago. And so, rather than doing the same match report as everybody else, there's a lot more emphasis on doing stuff that people wouldn't really expect. I did a piece just before Christmas on Dong Feng Shu, which was I'd always wanted to know what happened, what was the background to his move to United, what he, you know, how he felt when he was at United, and what happened to him in
bringing strikers in from China, like that's never going to work.
But it's good point. But it's that's the kind of thing. I mean, I wrote, I don't know, thousands of words on that and spent a long time working on it. And that's the kind of thing you can't really do on a newspaper. And it was really enjoyable. So yeah, it seems to be going really well.
I noticed that there's so many different people covering every single different club, and it seems like you're sort of above all clubs, and you sort of get the chance to just cherry pick and do whatever you feel like for each other club.
Well, not quite cherry pick in that sense, but yeah, I mean, there's freedom to come up with my own ideas. So if, you know, that like Laurie's reporting on United day to day, and Sam Lee is reporting on Man City day to day, James Pearce with Liverpool, etc. And then there's the likes of me and Danny Taylor that will kind of think, oh, I fancy doing a piece on this or that. Danny did a piece on the Manchester United Graves Society.
Yeah, I saw that one.
This week, which was, I mean, yeah, again, completely different, but the kind of thing that you wouldn't normally expect you wouldn't expect to find in a newspaper, and it was really interesting.
It's almost like a Rolling Stone sort of on football, isn't it? Where you
but
passion pieces almost.
Yeah, but we also, we also cover the matches and we cover the news and we cover, you know, the idea is with building a staff and a team stroke squad like that is that you've got enough people and enough time and enough resources and sort of time to think to be able to cover all bases and do things that other people aren't doing and haven't got the time to do.
What are you working on now?
Well, you probably don't want to hear it because I think it's...
Oh, fuck off.
There's suddenly a lot of thoughts about what we're going to have to write in do you know what I was going to say? Yeah, May. But it might be April, it might be March. So I started work today on a big project about a club not so far away from here.
No, it's well far away. on a serious note, I'd be really interested on your thoughts on this as well, because how do we measure the success of this team versus, I don't know, 21 years ago?
Do you know what? This is the thing I've just finished work on. I would imagine the piece will be going off out very soon. I think it's really, really difficult to compare between one season and another.
Have you seen the... I've got a graph at the minute. I've got a spreadsheet of all of the league tables, and I'm putting in a graph of... Have you got the same thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Where the top chunk of the league are taking more points per... And people will be like, oh, the top teams beat the bottom teams. Not as much as they used to. There's a trend for 25 years ago, the top teams took this many points, whereas if you look how many points people have amassed, even Chelsea a couple of years ago amassed
was 95 or something. Last season was 97 and 90. Oh, City, two seasons ago, was 100. 97 and 98, last season, Liverpool and City.
So is it fair to say the Premier League's becoming less competitive? Well, possibly competitive at the very top end, but overall.
I'd say the trend across Europe is for it to be, whereas I think the first Premier League season, right? You know, when United won the league and Leeds, who had won the league the year before, finished 2 points clear of relegation.
Wow, I didn't actually know that.
I remember them having a terrible season. I don't think they won away the whole season, although if they did, it was right at the end. But they finished two points clear. Arsenal finished about 8 points above relegation. Liverpool, I think, finished eighth and were 10 points clear of relegation. So, Liverpool, that's having won a few games in the final weeks. And so, in terms of competitiveness, I mean, that's about as fiercely competitive as it gets. If you teams are going down with a bit more than 40 points, and if teams winning the league with, United won the league with 79 points one season.
Wasn't the treble season with 79 points?
Yeah.
Or it might have been 81.
And that, you would say, in terms of a competitive league, where the standard, where the standard across the board is so competitive that you genuinely don't know what's going to happen week to week.
Is this because squads are becoming better and deeper, and able to compete on deeper into the league without going through those big rough patches? Is it because the top end are really pulling away financially?
I think they should be. The financial divide between the top six or the big six. Spurs until the last few years, although they were part of the big six, they haven't been on the same level financially as the other five. But there has been this sort of big six and then the rest. You've seen these big drop-offs between sixth and seventh place over the last few seasons. And that is just reflects resources. I mean, United were pretty terrible last season and finished way clear of Wolves, who were seventh, and Arsenal over Burnley.
When we came second, we were shit.
Yeah.
And second with 81 points.
Yeah. But I'd say that season, United were as good as they've been post-Fergie that season.
Well, it was our highest finish. Yeah.
Liverpool were improving. Arsenal were
But Liverpool all came right. fourth that season.
Yeah. Right? Spurs were good. City were obviously very, very good. But so two seasons later, we've got a situation where a lot of those clubs have dropped and are rebuilding. But I think how do you say how do you say which team was better? Because if you say United 99, United 94, United 2008, Arsenal 2004, Chelsea 2005, City 2018,
Liverpool, I thought Arsenal 2018 was better than their old.
Do you know what? I agree. So that 2002 team maybe better than 2004. Arsenal's 2004 team, the Invincibles, they drew loads of games, 12 games. But United, I think, drew even more the treble season. I think.
Did we?
Yeah, I think they drew 13, I think. I think
I don't know our trouble season. I think we lost three and they lost six in their invincible season.
In terms of cups and...
Yeah, they lost in all the cups, obviously.
But it's... I mean, to be doing what City... To do what City did two seasons ago and last season, and to do what Liverpool have done last season and this season, I think... I mean, how can it not compare? Because, you're saying... How can... I know the idea... The argument is, well, the league's terrible this season. Or the league's terrible.
It's unfair to just blanket that.
People always say that. And that's the piece that I've written. And if you look at the 2004, the Arsenal Invincible season, Liverpool finished fourth with, I think, 60 points. I think they won something like 16 games out of 38. They were terrible. They finished fourth. So if the argument is about... if the argument is about, you don't judge the... You judge the league by, the standard of the top four or the standard of the top ten or the...
Yeah, so how do you judge a body of 20 teams?
It's so difficult.
But lads, can someone grab us that thing we was looking at the other day and tell me where that Tottenham team came? Was it 2013, 2011, Tottenham team, something like that? One with Bale and Modric and all that? Yeah. I think it came 11th.
Did they? What, 20...
Yeah, something like that,
Because
yeah.
I mean, Spurs... Spurs, were really struggling when Redknapp went there, and they 2008. To my mind, they became top six team after that. But
let's find it. Be a list of Spurs seasons in here.
Yeah.
It's I think you look at some of the teams, but then you look at some of the teams that was or some of the players that was playing, in 93, 94, 95. You look at like Warren Barton and stuff, and you just go, mate, you're not playing.
Well, exactly. Are we recording again now? Because I'll
oh, we didn't stop.
Yeah. if you look at the United treble team 99, and
not a bad team, Ollie.
It's a brilliant team, absolutely brilliant team, brilliant team. They lost three games. They lost to Arsenal, I think 3-0. They lost at Sheffield Wednesday. And they lost against Middlesbrough. And I looked back at those teams and who was in those teams. And the Middlesbrough team, it was like Robbie Musto in midfield and Andy Townsend at 35. And Sheffield Wednesday, it was Peter Atherton and people like that. And you think, well, would the equivalent of those guys now be getting... Would they play in the Premier League now? I don't think they would. So in terms of technical quality, in terms of everything else, I think the standard has gone up. Definitely over the last 20 years.
This is a team that came 11th. Paul Robinson, Berbatov, Keane.
What year was that?
It was 08, 09, I think. Ledley King.
Oh, well, that was where they sacked Ramos early in the season. They were like...
Then
Redknapp came in and they stabilised and finished mid-table, and then they finished, I think, fourth the next season. But it was, I think, you can pick all sorts of holes in this Premier League this season and say how, you can say it's the poorest United team, poorest Arsenal team. You can say City are well below what they should be. I agree with all of that.
But player for player, that City squad should be one challenging on every front.
It should be, definitely. But the number of points City have got at this stage...
It's still enough to win pretty much every league that has ever been.
And, I mean, it's they've lost five games, so it's not too clever, but it's more than certain champions have had at this point, and they're still on course for more than, I think, the United treble team, or roughly about...
I seem to remember Fergie saying, you can lose six games to the champions.
Yeah.
Not anymore, you can't.
No, absolutely not. But then it will go in cycles, won't it? The argument was sort of 4 or 5 years ago that you needed 90 points to win the league, and then there was the season where Leicester won it and they won it with 81 points, I think, and then next was like 72 points, and that was a freakish season. And now we've got a situation where City and Liverpool City and Liverpool last season 98 and 97 points. God knows how many Liverpool are going to get this season. And is it, I think what it really shows is I mean, you can't put it just down to finance because you've got the rest of the big six are all underperforming and you've got Leicester in the top six, you've got Sheffield United in the top six. So you can't say it's because of the financial gulf. But I think the gap in resources and the gap in probably quality. When a big club with lots of money gets it right, they have the possibility to dominate. And I think things like the way the laws have changed and you can, you know, there's, you can't sort of really get stuck into a team and kick them off the park and hope to beat them one. I mean, that was always the argument about the Arsenal teams of the 2000s that, you know, you could kick them off the park when they went to Bolton and Blackburn and Stoke and places like that. And I did loads of those games and sometimes it happened and sometimes they sort of stood up to the challenge and won. But
City was famous like that for a bit with Stoke and Sunderland and that.
They
struggled against those teams quite heavily.
But I think these days, and I think you can't really play that way these days. I mean, you know, people say, oh, Wolf Sahar gets terrible treatment. I mean, he gets fouled a lot, but it's not like it was 15 years ago, never mind 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And so that, you know, that makes it, that's one thing that works in the favour of the more talented players. Pitches are better. And I think, I saw something Sam Allardyce said in an interview where he spoke about how, you know, nearly all the teams in the Premier League now want to play a very technical, possession-based game, and that's true. And that, if Bournemouth or Brighton or, you know, Norwich are trying to take on Liverpool or Man City at their own game, and I know Norwich beat City at the start of the season, but nine times out of ten, the better team will win. I think everybody welcomes the sort of move to a more technical Premier League, maybe except Sam Allardyce, but it's. I think those teams would say they get tougher. You know, the top teams would say they get tougher games a lot of the time if they go to Burnley away or if they go to teams that are going to be really physical with them and
different.
Yeah, and
Sam Allardyce is a weird one because everyone thinks of him as, you know, someone who eats a bag of crisp on a toilet, sort of pint of wine kind of guy, which is probably unfair.
But it looked like the pint of wine bit was fair, but I don't think I doubt he eats crisps on the toilet.
But he was one of the first adopters of stats in football.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he's extremely technical in a different way to what most people consider, you know, a little Spanish midfielder technical. I think Sam Allardyce looks at a game and goes, I know how we get what we're going for here, and I would like to play this way. And I bet he has as much a defined style of play than any Guardiola team has ever had. It's just, it's different.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've known Sam Allardyce since he was at Notts County 21 years ago. And
he, can we get him on here, Ollie? I'd love to talk to Sam about that technical stuff.
I'll have a word with him. I'll see if he would. He's,
I'll ask him about the crisp.
Well, maybe not, but it's, ask him about a pint of wine, he'd answer that. But it's, he varied the way he played it. You know, almost every club he was at. I mean, it didn't vary between, you know, the stereotypical Allardyce style and the Barcelona style. I mean, it was varying sort of within a scale. But he would. I mean, I covered Bolton a fair bit when he was there, and
yeah, Bolton in Europe.
But it was the games where they were up against Arsenal and United and Liverpool where he played that way. They're really, you know, hurling it into the box and, you know, high balls up to Kevin Davis. They'd always do that as an option. But when they were playing teams that they were technically better than, which was quite a few of them, because, you know, Ivan Campo and J.J. Kutcher and Fernando
Jorkaev.
Exactly.
Some good footballers
in
there.
So they would vary it. They would mix it up a lot. Not just game to game, week to week, but within games they would vary it a lot. And they would, you know, it's like, you know, if you're playing Championship Manager or whatever, and you sort of flip between short and direct, because you know, I mean, that doesn't really happen with most teams where they would really change their approach drastically within games. But he would do that, and I think. I think at that time, where you know, when Bolton was such a hard place to go, and I saw United lose there, Liverpool lose there, Arsenal there, lose there, and it's, I don't think there are so many places at the moment where you'd say that's a hard place to go. Mm. And that's in terms of, probably in terms of atmosphere as well, and pitches, and but also in terms of the way teams play, where I think I would much rather watch Norwich every week than watch the Wimbledon of 20 years ago. But you know, I would also say that if 18 out of 20 teams play variations on a similar style, then you are probably going to get more dominant top teams.
Yeah, and I think if you're that one team that likes to play a different style, if you are a Burnley with a Burnley budget, it probably suits you to go with an entirely different formation that people aren't used to.
They
don't know how to deal with this week in, week out, because they're not seeing it in training from their own team, and they're not seeing it from every other team in the league. If you come with this entire different out-of-the-box thing, you're very likely to have more success because people just haven't figured you out yet as well.
Exactly. And then, you know, Burnley finished seventh a few seasons ago, which, I mean, Sheffield United are fifth at the moment, are they? And
where do you think that's going to go with Sheffield United? Are they going to do what Burnley did and drop off, do you think? With Europa?
Well, they've just had a really sort of tough-looking run of games, and they've come through it, and they're still fifth, and they've got a gentler run of games now, and maybe those are the games that they'll find harder in some ways. But, you know, getting Sander Berg he's a guy that, you know, a lot of Premier League clubs were looking at. I'm sure United had looked at him at some point with the Norwegian link, and I wouldn't be the person to ask, because I was saying all season in 2016, Leicester will drop off in the final few. Leicester drop off after Christmas. Leicester will drop off after February. Leicester will drop off. Well, no, they didn't. They didn't drop off at all. They dropped off the next season.
But is that a European thing then?
Yeah,
and
probably a kind of sense of, wow, we did it, and how on earth do you follow that? I mean, I played out of the skin, and then the season finished. So you might get that with Liverpool this season. You've had it with City this season, seems to have had a drop-off. But Sheffield United, I would say teams haven't worked them out yet. And I think teams worked out Burnley a bit the next season and started to change the way they played against them. And so, you know, you can be a surprise package in the Premier League, but you can't really be a surprise package for long.
Yeah, and if you are, you're just good.
I think
you've just figured it out, you're just good. A mate of mine was a strength and conditioning coach at Saints, and when they were not in Europe and surprised everyone, he said it's great. You know, the players do the recovery, they start early on the prep for the next game, we go deep on tactics. The players are well prepared, they're well rested, and they go and perform well because they've had a whole week to deal with it. They said then when they got into Europe, it was like, shit, it's recover, quick letter tactics, go again, shit, recover.
Yeah.
They said it just the season just rolled.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've seen recently when Chelsea didn't have any European football. They dropped that far out of it and won the league.
Yeah.
We've seen Sheffield United do it. We've seen Leicester do it.
Yeah.
And I think league form is massively affected by Europe.
It is. Unless you can get into a pattern where you're really comfortable. I mean, Liverpool have handled it really well this season. United always used to handle it really well. And you know, the Champions, you know, they would just roll through those Champions League group stages. They would play two games in a week, no problem at all. Mm. And Fergie was brilliant at rotating his squad, and he would say to Giggs, right, you're not playing this one, but get yourself ready for Chelsea at home 2 weeks on Sunday. And he'd play a blinder.
Have I been dropped or what?
Yeah. And I'm saving you for this. Skull's the same. And it was, I'd say that. I spoke to Sean Dyche, would it be a year ago? I'm trying to think. Yeah, and he was saying about how after getting into Europe was just such a culture shock, because not only the playing games in July and August, but they played eight games when other teams had played three, and they played you know, that thing of two games a week. I mean, if you're in the Premier League and you go out of the cups early, you're playing 40 games a season, and you hardly got a midweek game. It's generally one game a week. And he was saying it was just a massive culture shock, and there was all the travelling, and then there was just the fact that they got, you know, they, because of all of those things, they came out the box slowly, and
yeah, didn't they play their first qualifier in like July?
Yeah, and it was yeah, as did Wolves this season. And Wolves started slowly, but they've got a lot better as the season has gone on. But there is a feeling they're kind of, you know, maybe slowing down a bit. But, you know, they might have needed a few more reinforcements. They've not got the biggest squad, but Dyche's thought was that not only did it take it out of them physically and mentally, all that sort of mental fatigue stuff, but also the fact that they were suddenly, having been playing out of the skin the previous season, finishing seventh, they were suddenly back to sort of grind. You know, the fun had gone out of it. It was a slog. Everything was slog, even once they got out of Europe, and they were kind of losing games. The feel-good factor of the previous season had gone. He's put it as, well, you know, we've lost the eye of the tiger, and we need to get it back. And yeah, I think they, generally speaking, have probably got it back over the last 12 months, particularly the last few weeks. But that, I think Burnley's season when they finished seventh, and then the season where they dropped off again, I think that does show how, that's a great example of how hard it is for teams, not only when they've got Europe to contend with, but when the momentum of a previous season has gone and it's sort of replaced by, well, we're back at our own level now, and we're...
Momentum's huge, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
It's a weird one because you can't quantify it.
No.
And still every game starts as this game because all runs eventually come to an end, otherwise there'd be weight going into them. But like, even when Liverpool played the kids and they just played pretty much the exact same thing and beat Everton, you're like, fuck's sake.
No, it's I mean, momentum and mood within a club, and you know, there's that sort of feel good factor at Liverpool now, and there's probably the opposite at United and opposite at Arsenal and opposite at, you know, most clubs, you know, I mean, there aren't many grounds where you would go to at the moment in the Premier League and say, oh, that's a happy place, that's a cheery place, that must be a joy to play football there. Sheffield United is one. I'd say Wolves have it, Liverpool have it, City have had it the last few seasons, but now, you know, a poor run of form, relatively poor run of form, and it gets all
they're
a bit
grumpy. They're never sacking Pep, are they? They're never sacking Pep.
Oh, no. No chance.
Do you think he's there next year?
Everyone I speak to at the club says, yeah, there's no doubt about it. He's got a contract till 2021, and he's going to stay. He's happy. And I've asked that question of quite a few different people, because I think logically there's a question mark. I wrote a piece at the start of this week, which was just about something he said relating to his time at Barcelona, and he said, you know, when you're a manager, you know, you don't have to motivate them, you have to seduce them. You look into their eyes, and it's like looking into the eyes of a lover. Sorry about this. It's and he says you need to know that they're ready to be seduced by you, and if you reach the point where you look into their eyes and that passion ebbs away or something like that, that's when you know it's time to go. Now, he got to that point at Barcelona. 4 years. He got to that point at Bayern, 3 years. I don't think many people expected him to go beyond 4 years at City. And this season has probably been the first time in his career where a winning formula has stopped working. I know in his final season at Barcelona, there was quite a big drop-off and they lost the title to Real Madrid. And he felt that, you know, he was exhausted and they needed a new challenge, a new voice. He needed a new challenge and recharge his batteries. But I think this season, if you look at it, although they're still a really good team, you would say this is the first time in his career he's probably been faced with questions that he's not had to answer before. And
he's barely spent anything.
But it's...
he's not. You can't say he's been backed, can you?
What's that?
You can't say he's been backed.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, but I would say... If you look at those two seasons back to back, it's so extraordinary what he did. But there was, you know, there was probably, with hindsight, an inevitable drop off, and that would probably be one straw to clutch regarding Liverpool at the moment.
You mean one straw? You mean like Ollie? Let's role play this here right now. You tell me Liverpool won the league. Pep Guardiola's fucked this up, Ollie. That's what's happened. Okay. Right, okay. That's the full-on deflection tactic I'm using. Right. I did say from May, but I think you're right. It might be as of next month.
But you're all cheering him on last April, May. What you stopped cheering City on. That's the.
Well, they're not going to fucking do it now, are they?
Okay.
The whole league united against Liverpool as a humanity.
Yeah, but it's
having the press.
But the press. The press always praise the team who's good. I know it's the most obvious thing to say, but I'm sure United fans will remember. Right. It's not that long ago,
Ollie,
that United were getting.
We have Premier League gears on every day in here. It's pretty much the one thing that we watch. 1999. Remember what happened in 99?
What, as in pulling out the FA Cup? And...
No. Although, yeah, but no. Like, you remember what happened in 99? It's a pretty good season for United, wasn't it?
It was rather good.
Sky Sports shown their own promo, which was just hyping the shit out of Liverpool. To the young lads coming through, like Carragher and stuff like that.
99, geez.
Yeah, honestly. Watching, you're like, hang about.
They were terrible. They were terrible around that time.
It was coming up to the 10-year anniversary of not winning the league, and they was like, is this their
year? Oh, so going into 99, 2000, and they'd signed Eric Meyer and Titi Kamara. I mean, just going back to City, so then... I think there's logically you can ask, you can wonder whether something in Pep will tell him that I've had my 4 years here. I'm not one of these who says, oh, he's not done this, he's not done that. But I think he's utterly phenomenal. I think he's the best.
I think he's a very good coach.
I think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think he's absolutely brilliant.
In terms of a man manager, I mean, I look at what Zlatan said about him, and I look at what a couple of others have said about him, and I go, maybe he's not the greatest manager. He's got an unbelievable plan A, but
there are people with an axe to grind against Ferguson who will say, oh, yeah. He was
Roy Keane being one of them.
Yeah. But, you know, Ibrahimovic, I read the first chapter of Ibrahimovic's book, and he's just going on about Guardiola. I thought he just sounded like an idiot, as in Zlatan. I think, you know, it was probably designed to.
He's normally say so rational as well. Mm-hmm. He's normally so rational as well.
I know, but he was just. I know the whole. You know, I mean, he was good for United, and he's been great everywhere he's been. But he's the
Barcelona. Bar Barcelona.
Well, he did all right at Barcelona, but he wanted the forward line to be built around him, and it was built around Messi, and I think that was the right.
But what's he done in the game? Eh?
Who, Messi? Yeah.
Has he ever done it in Italy?
Could he do it on a Tuesday night at Stoke?
Probably.
The only team that can't do it Tuesday night at Stoke these days is Stoke, unfortunately.
As a
Stoke fan told me that. But anyway, back to Pep. If he thinks, yes, I'll stay, and I think he will, because that's what everyone says, it will be the first time he's really had to sort of bring a team back up again, having fallen short. And when I say fallen short, they might yet win the FA Cup, the League Cup, Champions League.
They're still favourites for the Champions League.
Hmm?
They're still the favourites for the Champions League.
Despite having Real Madrid, which is... It will be interesting. I'm interested to see how they perform between now and the end of the season, because if they really drop off, if people don't recover form, individuals don't recover form, he will be wanting to make massive changes this summer if he stays. And that's something he's not really done. He has made brilliant technical, tactical changes with the teams he's inherited. He's managed those teams brilliantly. I will not hear a word said against the job he did at Barcelona. I think it was incredible. I would say if he's to rebuild a team, that is something that very few managers do these days. It's something Fergie did again and again. It's something that Guardiola hasn't done in his career.
Would you be shocked if Mourinho he did walk away at the end of the season, though?
I wouldn't be shocked, but it's you know, I've asked the question of a lot of people because I think, oh, sure, you know, is there a Summer's question mark there?
It, yeah.
But everyone says, no, he's staying. But you know.
Barcelona also needs something drastic. Do you think that'd be where he does go if he did go?
I think Barcelona is the club for him. I mean, he went to Bayern and it always looked like a sort of strange fit in some ways because, you know, it's a different identity to him. I think he did a good job there. City, he looks like, you know, he looks like a... He doesn't look like part of the fabric of Man City in the way that he did at Barcelona or Fergie did at United or even that Klopp does at Liverpool. It looks less natural fit in some ways. And so, you know, he's turning around in the Champions League games and saying, you know, why is it so quiet? And well, that's because there's the Tunnel Club at City, which, you know, they can't really sell out, or they've got opposition fans in there or whatever.
No comment whatsoever.
But, you know, he's sort of complaining about, oh, why isn't it full? And I think, well, look, you're going on about there being too many games. Why do you think it's not full? It's because there are so many games. You haven't got a club. You're at a club which hasn't got the biggest fan base in the world. It's got enough fans to sell out their Premier League games, and that's something a lot of people don't recognise or give them credit for or whatever. But
no comment at all.
He's not at one of the sort of super clubs in terms of fan base. He doesn't seem to sort of necessarily get it in the same way that certain managers do at certain clubs, and he, I don't know. He looked like he was in love with Barcelona. I thought it looked like a professional relationship at Bayern. I think it looks like a professional relationship at City. I think maybe that's what he needed, because Barcelona just sort of drove him to the point of mental exhaustion as the kind of standard bearer of not only a team, but a city and a region. And I think City's a, you know, City looks to me like somewhere where he would spend 4 or 5 years. I can't see him spending beyond next season.
I wonder what they do next. There's obviously talk of different managers being lined up and stuff like that, but this very much was a race car built for Pep to come and drive.
Yeah.
And then when he gets out, it's going to be like, now what do we do?
Well,
although I still think they're a very, very well-run club behind us.
They are. They are a brilliantly run club, and I think their decision making is brilliant, and it's probably everything that United aren't at the moment, you know, in terms of strategy and infrastructure, and you know, that word structure that Solskjaer says is great at United, but contrary to all evidence. But
Ollie, why do managers talk utter bollocks and lie to us in press conferences?
Well,
when we know they're lying.
It's important to know when they're lying. It's important to be able to recognise, look, he's just saying that to defend his players, or he's just saying that to defend his club, or he's just saying that to defend his own position. I think that's, you know, they don't say things to, you know, whether it's Klopp, Guardiola, Solskjaer, Ancelotti, whoever, they are not talking in the interests of 100% transparency and truth. So, I mean, Solskjaer is, I mean, he says things. I mean, he's asked about the structure at United. He says it's great. I mean, what else is he going to say? Because the alternative would be to say what Mourinho said, which is kind of which eroded a lot of the credit he had with the hierarchy. You know, he went public about how sort of he wasn't being backed and made, or at least made very clear that he wasn't happy about lack of backing in the transfer market.
Jose and Louis, and I think Moyes, all said similar stuff while they were here.
Yeah.
I've got the full backing of the board, I've got this, that and the other. And then they left and was like, oh, that place.
Yeah.
And we all kind of knew.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't even get the truth when managers leave, because there's sometimes a sign, confidentiality agreements, and sometimes they're terrified of even saying a word. But it's, you know, it's clear that, I mean, just the fact that United have had this minor overhaul of their structure over the last 12, 18 months or so shows you that they recognise it wasn't good enough before. I still question whether it's good enough now. But they say, you know, they say things to protect their own position, whether that's by saying things about the players which aren't true, saying thing, you know, talking up the strength of the vision and unity of the vision behind the scenes, whether it's, you know, it's, they say they are speaking in their interests and the interests of the team. I don't think much of the time the interests of the team and the interests of the manager are served by being 100% truthful. So
no, even Fergie came out and said these are great owners.
Oh, he did. Yeah. And you know, why did we replace Ronaldo with Valencia and Tevez with Michael Owen? It's because there was no value in the market.
Oh,
and,
God, that fucking phrase.
Well, you know, Real Madrid and Man City and Bayern Munich and other clubs play, you know, signed great players that summer. And Fergie never said a word against the Glazers. And there are managers who do it that way. Wenger never said a word against Kroenke when he was there. And then you get the sort of Benitez Mourinho type who constantly say things against their owners. And you think, well, right, that's another way of doing it. Does that really help either? Does that, you know, Benitez, you know, won a lot of favour at Liverpool and at Newcastle by talking against unpopular owners, but did it do him much good? Did it do the club much good? It's something to be debated.
And there's also that everything's a sell, whether it's with the manager, whether it's with the club, whoever it is, everything is a sell.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like, I'm trying to sign you. But the last press conference I did, I was telling the whole world the truth about how this club's run.
Yeah.
And then I sit down, and you're looking at a newspaper with my quotes on it and be like,
absolutely.
You want me to sign? You want me to join you there?
Yeah.
My bout, no.
Yeah. No, so Solskjaer is, I mean, he's, I was going to say glass half full, but he's a glass quarter full man at the moment. You know, he's having to put a positive spin on a negative situation, and he's never grumbled. And he's, I think part of the reason he's there is to be somebody who represents the acceptable happy face of Manchester United at a time when it's not, clearly not a happy club.
When they got rid of Mourinho, there was a word going around, I can't remember who told me this, but they literally, the club had almost put out, you won't be criticised, to the press, you won't be criticising our new manager for the same things he criticised the last one for. In terms of like how he speaks about the players and stuff like that.
Deliberate
appointment.
As in you won't see those same traits.
Yeah.
Oh,
he nailed that.
He speaks.
I think he's gone too far with it.
He speaks completely. You know, I felt for the first 2 months, God, it's great to hear a Manchester United manager talking the way a Manchester United manager should talk, which was, you know, talking about playing on the front foot, talking about being positive, talking about, you know, encouraging the young players, praising them to the hilt rather than saying what they can't do, which is what Mourinho, you know, Mourinho was sour as a Manchester United manager. And I think a lot, I never thought it was a good fit at all. Partly because of the football, partly because of the demeanour. I never thought he was. If we talk about fit between manager and club,
I don't think he fits at Tottenham either. There was a press conference the other day, and I was watching him. He goes, it's weird that he's their manager.
I know. Almost of all clubs, the idea of him at Tottenham is really strange because Tottenham, you know, have a very sort of different reputation. But I think Inter Milan suited him. I think Chelsea suited him. Real Madrid didn't, in my opinion. But it's, Solskjaer spoke, you know, the language a Manchester United manager should speak. And then, when I think, since results have turned, I think he's spoken the language of, you know, a manager who's trying to portray, you know, say it's sunny when it's not.
Yeah.
You know.
I think
giving sunshine when skies are grey. There you go.
He hasn't. Yeah. To quote his song, his message hasn't changed from when we were beating Cardiff 5-1 to when we're drawing at home with Wolves. And I think we'd probably appreciate him more going, that just wasn't fucking good enough. But, you know, eventually that comes round and been like, well, 10 times it's not been good enough. What's going on? And yeah, there's a mare in it.
Do you know what I really hate, though, is seeing on Twitter and social media, you see United fans who are probably too young to recognise the player Solskjaer was, or remember him or recognise the player he was. And to him, to them, you know, he's just some Norwegian bloke who used to play for United who somehow got a manager's job, and they're kind of doing these memes of him as a clown or as the Joker or whatever. And you just think, God's sake, that is, you know, if this ends terribly, if he's found to be totally out of his depth and moved on at the end of the season, and if it's a relief for all concerned, you still don't ridicule a guy who is one of the most loved players.
The day we sack him, I'm going to still want to cuddle him.
Well, you know, Kenny Dalglish was second time round at Liverpool. It didn't go well. I mean, he went all right in that they won the League Cup, and it was better than the guy who'd gone before, Hodgson. But you know, he's the greatest player in the history, or you know, renowned as that. And Solskjaer, he's not George Best, but he's one of the most loved players in the club's history, particularly the modern history. And you know, I saw the same when Martin O'Neill was at Forest, and you get fans who, you know, are too young or ignorant to know better, sort of ridiculing him as this sort of dinosaur. And
yeah, I see that.
I think that's sad, and I think you've got to, you know, I think if it doesn't work out with Solskjaer, I think he still deserves.
It's a strong chance.
He deserves to. Well, look, I don't think it is working out, and I think it's a question of how long they give it. And I hope that when he leaves, I hope it's being cheered out, because I think he's, you know, I don't think it will be, because I think the match going fans at United are, I mean, even amid the chants about the Glazers and Woodward the other week, they're still chanting his name. Nobody, you know, he doesn't get the kind of attack.
Oh God.
Thing that
Lewin, that was getting,
you know, and no Man United manager, you know, Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho, Solskjaer, they've never had the sort of lame, you know, you don't know what you're doing. They've never had the sort of harsh treatment and sort of ridicule, pantomime villain treatment that some clubs fans give the manager. And I think that's because there's a knowledge and there's a patience at United, and maybe there's been too much patience with the board. I think people respect, the fans who go to the games respect the manager, and in this case love the manager and want it to work out. And if it doesn't work out, those fans will give him will still love him. And I hope that the fans who don't remember him playing will still appreciate, A, that he's one of the greatest players in the club's history, but also that while you can say, look at everyone else, but you can look at a lot of people at Old Trafford over the last decade and say, look, that guy's a villain of the piece here. That player didn't pull his weight. Mm. That manager didn't do this. That, you know, the owners generally. I don't think you can accuse Solskjaer of anything other than, you know, maybe his best not being good enough. And I don't think you can say, oh, he's a clown or a yes man. He's doing his best.
The line that does me in the most is, which other Premier League club would want him? And if he didn't score, I saw this, if he didn't score a tap-in for us, a fucking tap-in. I can't tell you what the next 20 minutes happened that night, on the 26th of May 1999.
It's my birthday, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ha. The fact is, he did score that tap-in.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to call it a fucking tap-in. Oh, that won us the treble, by the way.
Yeah.
And he is a club legend. So it's irrelevant asking which other Premier League team would have him, because he's a fucking club legend.
Yeah,
who
yeah.
else was second Frank Lampard after an ordinary stint at Derby?
Yeah, well, I mean,
where was Pep?
I would say Guardiola wouldn't have got Guardiola wouldn't have got that job in 2008.
Probably. Bayern Munich
and Barcelona very often appoint people because they're felt to belong to the club, and that seems
did Bayern appoint Zidane.
Well, no, but it's...
When Real Madrid did?
Yeah, but they, you know, by... So, you know, sometimes those appointments work out, sometimes they don't. It's interesting at the moment, because it feels like a lot of clubs are looking at that kind of connection and thinking, right, what did United need after Mourinho and after Van Gaal? They felt they needed somebody who understood the club. And even though it was meant to be a sort of short-term arrangement, you know, that was felt like something that would sort of heal wounds. And that's what, you know, I mentioned Liverpool with Dalglish. That's what that appointment was about. And Lampard at Chelsea, that's about sort of restoring an identity that, you know, they've won trophies over the last few years, but there's been a sense that their identity has been lost. That they've wasted talent, very good talent from the academy, and that they needed to go in a different direction and be a different kind of club. Arsenal with Arteta, would Arteta have got the Arsenal job had he not been an ex-Arsenal player? Probably not. Although, you know, he has a good reputation as an assistant, and would probably be in the frame for Premier League jobs if he got them. But I think what those appointments do is, you know, when it's clearly about sort of healing wounds and building bridges and trying to sort of restore that identity, I think everyone saw that worked for a time, and then maybe after about 12 months you look at it and say, well, okay, that was necessary at that time. Is this working? And sometimes, you know, sometimes there are things that, you know, maybe Solskjaer will be seen as the person that sort of built a bridge through the most trying, difficult time and sort of started the kind of rebuild that's necessary. But
I'm not sure he is the guy, but I think the club that he leaves will be better than the one that he arrived in.
Maybe not in terms of names on the team sheet or in terms of, you know, value on the team sheet or in terms of points or whatever. But I think that word identity is overused in some cases and probably overused by me in this conversation. But I think when he talks about that idea of, you know, restoring the culture of the club and DNA, etc., I know those are just phrases and words. I think that is important because I think that is what United have lost, and it's going to require much better players across the board to take them back to where, you know, they were 10 years ago. But it's a better manager. Look, you know, Solskjaer is not going to win the league as Manchester United manager. I'm fairly certain of that. But it's.
I don't think we're winning the league while the Glazers are still in charge, because I don't think they've got the desire to do the sort of really top-down overhaul that this club requires. Fucking roof leaks at Old Trafford.
Oh, I know. That's. I mean, it's. I was walking around Old Trafford about 3 years ago, and I normally park in the, what is it, the south, east car park, and, you know, just go through the Munich tunnel. I don't normally go around the Ferguson stand, but, you know, go around that side of the Stretford end and the you know, the old North Stand. It's just. I mean,
it's one of the most photographed buildings run in a fucking country.
But you've got that front which is, you know, glass, and that's all clean and sparkling and shiny.
Not that clean.
No, but
you're looking at the side of the white stanchions at the top.
But the Stretford end just looks so dated. It looks so 90s, and look, I mean, I was surprised when, like, Barcelona announced a few years ago, we're going to sort of rebuild or redevelop the new Camp. You think, is that really necessary? But then you look at the outside, you thought, it's actually, look at its age.
Bernabeu as well.
Yeah.
Minion.
But Old Trafford was redeveloped in the 90s and redeveloped so much better than, you know, Anfield was and Highbury was.
I mean, what have we done since the Glazers came in?
It was the quadrants when...
It was only the quadrants.
But that was like the first year, I think. I think that was the first...
It's probably already booked in.
Yeah. So, and that, you know, that was. I was told that they had a lot of cash reserves at the end of that first year. And I thought, well, we'll do that. That's a good use of that cash. And it's paid for itself many times. But I know there are challenges with the South Stand, with the, with the railway behind and so on, but it just looks like you know, because I'm not at Old Trafford. When I'm at Old Trafford, I was in a certain part of the ground, and that's all right, but it's been redeveloped, the press lounge over the last 12 months. Before that, it had like pictures of Tim Howard up and Alan Smith, and you're thinking, well, okay, this is all very 2004. That's been redone, but you know, down the corridor to the lounges, and it's, it doesn't feel like, you know, when they're showing their VIPs and their sponsors around, it can't be as impressive as when the people at City are showing people around that tunnel club and all that kind of thing. I don't, you know, football shouldn't be about who's got the best corporate facilities. It definitely shouldn't. But Old Trafford, even in the corporate areas, is not comparable to, you know.
Even something as simple as the Cliff.
Yeah, yeah.
United did a podcast in there the other day with Brian Robson and the people from MUTV. And the fact that Robbo was like, yeah, this is what it was like when I came.
Yeah, yeah,
in 1980.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you talking about?
But it's like frozen in time, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
this is Fergie's office. Yeah, still.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like, fucking left here 20 years ago. Yeah, like, yeah. It's still used very regularly for both the foundation and for academy games are played there. Make it a nice facility.
Didn't they train there one day?
Fergie took them back there. Yeah, Ollie took them back there, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Carrington's, it was way ahead of its time, or way ahead of the
20
facilities.
20 years ago.
But it was 20 years ago. And, you know, they've done bits since and developed it again. And, you know, the academy, et cetera. It has continually been developed, but I don't think it's a market leader. I don't think it's sort of the best training ground in the country like it was 20 years ago. I think Spurs, in many people's eyes, is the best. Liverpool are moving to another one, I think, at the end of this season. And it's, you know, that kind of investment in the infrastructure isn't, I mean, it's happened to a degree, but I don't think there's the dedication to making it the best it could possibly be.
What's the least we can spend to give the appearance that we're asked?
But also, you know, with the transfers, you know, the players that United have signed, it's they've spent a lot of money over the last 6 years. I don't think they spent enough in the 6 years before that.
Correct.
To keep United at where they were.
That's
in 2008.
That's a massive issue.
So they've then started to sort of make up for lost time and throw it. But, you know, there's this sort of...
Right, our recording crashed right at the very end there. So basically, Ollie just wrapped it up talking about the Glazers and how shit they are. But thank you guys for tuning in for that. Make sure to go and check out Ollie on The Athletic. And if you would like a month's free trial and up to 50% off your yearly subscription, then the link is in the description. Or you can go and check out howson.co.uk. No, it's not. It's theathletic.co.uk/Howson. That is theathletic.co.uk/Howson. Thanks, guys, for watching. Get any questions in, because I reckon we'll probably have Ollie back on again soon. See you in a bit.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.